identify your sphere of influence, and then once you identify the sphere of influence, you know what type of groups you can target or connect with.
Before we get into today's episode, are you a fix and flipper who needs some money? Do you need to maybe do more deals and you're limited by the funds you have available? Well then, Fund That Flip, today's best ever sponsor, has a solution for you. And you know Fund That Flip, right? You're a loyal best ever listener. The founder, Matt Rodak, he's been on the show multiple times, and they have been a previous sponsor, and they love working with the best ever listeners. And they provide short-term fix and flip loans to experienced investors. They've got an online platform, makes the entire process super easy, and you can get funded in as few as 7 days. So if you're looking for a reliable funding partner, go to fundthatflip.com and mention that, well, you heard about it on the Best Ever Show.
Best Ever listeners, how you doing? Welcome to the Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever Show. I'm Joe Fairless. This is the world's longest running daily real estate investing podcast. We only talk about the best advice ever. We don't get into any of that fluff. Joining me today, Theo Hicks for Follow on Friday, like we usually do. How you doing, my friend?
Doing good, Joe. A little under the weather, so hopefully my sniffling and coughing is to a minimum.
You haven't been coughing much, so that's good. The sniffling, I think we can handle. The coughing,
will be very annoying.
We've got some listener questions. We have the 4 surprising ways to raise money. I'm sure that is an intriguing topic for anyone looking to scale their real estate investing business. And we have some other updates. So let's get going. How do we want to get started?
Let's start with the main topic today, which, as you mentioned, is 4 surprising ways to raise money for apartment buildings.
Okay. These 4 ways are ways that I've come across in my own experiences, and they're ways that aren't talked about often, if at all, when the topic is discussed. So I'll list the 4, and then we'll talk through it a little bit. Number 1 is call, don't just email. Number 2 is have your significant other with you. Number 3 is to identify your spheres of influence. And number 4 is go out of your way to accommodate. So those are the 4. And let's talk about each of them. 1 is call, don't just email. Here's a story. 2 years ago, I got an email from someone through my Contact Us page. And loyal best ever listeners, you're going to remember this story from way long ago. I've mentioned it, but it's good to be reinforced on the story. And if you haven't heard about it, then here's a new one. A couple of years ago, I got a message via my Contact Us page. And it simply said, I'm interested in hearing about your investments, blah, 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 the person's name. And I replied, we talked, we had a good conversation, and he had heard about me from, I was being interviewed on someone else's podcast, Marco Santarelli, a cash flow podcast. He does turnkey rental properties. And this prospective investor, he and I connected, we had a phone conversation, he said, keep me posted on new deals. I said, okay, I will. Well, I sent him the next deal that we were doing, and he was initially interested, but then he said he needs some time to review it and take a look at it. Well, I didn't hear back from him, and I emailed him a couple times, and I still didn't hear back from him, and the fundraising portion was closing out, but it wasn't completely closed. So instead of continuing to email him, which a lot of people might do, and I used to do, I decided, here's a novel approach. Let me pick up the phone, and I'll call him. And lo and behold, he answered. I talked to him, and he said, oh, yeah, I've been meaning to review it. Sorry, I've been traveling a lot. Let me take a look at it, and then we'll go over it together. I said, okay, great. So we jumped on a call, and we went over it. Well, he invested a relatively small amount in that deal. Any amount of investment is large, I get that, but I'm saying relative to the overall raise, it was a relatively small amount. And that deal ended up being the first of many deals that we've done with him, and he has now invested approximately $18 million with us.
Wow.
And I guarantee that if I hadn't had called him and simply talked to him versus me just being lazy behind my computer, eating Cheetos and watching TV, I don't do one of those things. I do eat Cheetos, but I don't watch TV. Then I might not have ever had this relationship with him. And in fact, this past weekend, Frank, my business partner, and I toured three properties that we have just with him and his family. We went over the business plan and the updates. Call, don't just email. And the important thing to note, and this is where we've got to use the context clues that we come across. The important thing to note is identify which communication method is most effective with the individual. Because sometimes people on email, sometimes phone calls, sometimes Facebook message. I don't do Facebook messages with investors, but who knows? That might be something for someone. And I tend to see, now I'm going to make a generalization, which I hate generalizations because every generalization you can identify ways that you're not correct. But I will say, generally speaking, the older an individual is, the more likely a phone call is the best communication method versus email, generally speaking. In this case, though, this individual is in his late 30s, but just so busy running around, traveling and stuff. That's how it works. So call, don't just email.
It's a good story, yeah.
Number two is be involved with your spouse.
Spouse, yeah.
Yep, or your significant other. This is incredibly effective because ultimately people invest with you and then the deal. And it's nice to know who the general partner is spending most of their time with and what type of people do they attract and what type of characters does the spouse have, because it's just good to know more about the individual, because ultimately when people invest with you, they're investing their hard-earned dollars that they spent earning throughout their life, and they want to make sure that the person that they're investing with and the company they keep are good people. So that's a point that it's not only helped in my business, where Colleen and I will go to dinners with our investors, go to lake houses or football games or whatever, but also people who are in my consulting program, when they bring in their significant others, just in a social setting, not from a, let me ask Colleen about the operations of this property. She has no clue because she's not involved in that aspect of it. But just in a social setting, getting to know each other, it's worked out. And it's helped develop stronger relationships and friendships with not only my investors, but people who I consult with, their investors too.
I guess another note on that, I think it's Dave Thompson, your client, he has a decent percentage of his investors came from his wife's actual network. So it's not even the social aspect, but you know, your wife or your significant other might know people that are high net worth individuals. Like, for example, I know for me, if I ever raise money, most of the funding will probably come from Marcella's network versus my network. It's because she works in a large corporation and knows a lot of people who've already expressed interest in not investing with us, but like, oh, wow, I can't believe you have the time to invest in real estate. Like, I love to do that. I don't have the time. Which is kind of like, huh, okay, well, that's someone who would potentially be interested in being a private money investor. So that's another option, as well as using their network to get investors.
And that's exactly how I got started. When I was in advertising, people said, how are you able to do what you're doing while you have your full-time job? And then I taught a class and then went from there. Number three is identify your sphere of influence. And then once you identify the sphere of influence, you know what type of groups you can target or connect with. For example, when I got started, it was advertising agency professionals. It was people who were on the alumni advisory board with me at Texas Tech University. It was people who I played intramural sports with, flag football and softball. And once I know those areas or spheres of influence have been identified, advertising, Texas Tech, alumni advisory board, and intramurals, then I talk to someone in those networks. Once I talk to one person who's interested, word of mouth starts being generated. And the work is done for me because, assuming that I'm delivering on expectations or exceeding the expectations, people talk about what they're doing that's successful. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have a deal, then still having those conversations with some influencers in those networks, then having that name check, oh, well, I know you know Theo, we play softball, he's on our softball team, he and I were talking about this and XYZ. Just saying that helps with social credibility, yep. And that's a way you can raise more money. And then lastly, number four is to go out of your way to accommodate. For example, and this is an example where we had existing deals that investor has invested in. But I'll give you an example of if you're just starting out. But let me just say this real quick. I have an investor who has invested in multiple deals of mine and hadn't visited the properties yet because he doesn't live in Dallas, Fort Worth, or Houston. So he and his business partner asked if they could visit the property. I said, yes, absolutely. We'll set up a tour. I gave him a document that listed out his point of contact, the LinkedIn profile for the point of contact, because he's also looking at a new deal we had, the broker who was meeting him, his LinkedIn profile, his phone number, his email, the community manager for each of the properties he was visiting, their LinkedIn profile, if they had one, their phone number and email, and the district manager who is going to be meeting him, her email, her LinkedIn profile. And I also set up the flow for how I recommended he visit the properties based on where they are geographically. Mm-hmm. He was blown away. It wasn't just, oh yeah, sure, go check it out, here's your point person. It was a nice document with times that I recommend he go to each of the places with the contact information so that he could simply know exactly who he was meeting with and do some research on them ahead of time if he chose to do so. That's the type of stuff that goes a long way, in addition to obviously performing on the properties and meeting or exceeding expectations. But assuming that's the case, how else are you differentiating your mm-hmm. company from other people's? Now, if you don't have a deal and you're raising money for your first deal, then how do you apply this? How do you apply the going out of your way to accommodate investors? Well, how you can apply that is by being lightning quick in response time to your investors with thoughtful, substantive answers. One email I don't like is if I email someone and they say immediately, sure, I'll get on that. For some reason, some people have a different opinion on this. I'll just say why I don't like it. I don't like it because I would rather not receive another email from someone with a non-answer. I would prefer to have an email with the answer in a timely manner. Yeah. So instead of my recommendation, and again, other people have a different opinion on this, my recommendation, if someone emails you a question, my recommendation is if you can address it within a day and get the answer within a day, then don't reply immediately. My recommendation is you reply within that day with the answer. That way they're not getting bombarded with a couple emails. You agree. I can hear you. You're saying, yeah. Other people I've come across like, Joe, well, why didn't you reply immediately letting me know you were on it? This was in my advertising days, by the way, not real estate. And my mistake at that time was if it takes longer than a day for me to reply to get the good answer, then I should have said, yes, I acknowledge this and I will get your response by XYZ day. So being lightning quick, every investor of mine will be able to tell you that I have to be one of the most responsive people they've ever come across. Would you agree? I mean, you work with
me. Pretty responsive.
Yeah, I'm pretty responsive, just pretty responsive.
Very responsive.
All right. That's something I pride myself on, but it's not responding quickly for the sake of responding. That's where we need to make the distinction. It's responding with a substantive answer that addresses the question, not just responding and being more noise that the individual has to deal with during their day.
I think the idea of if you don't plan on providing them with an answer or getting them whatever it is they need within a day, then you can say, I'll get it to you, you know, Friday, end of day. But if you're going to send it to them in 5 minutes, there's no reason to be like, all right, I'll send it to you in 5 minutes and then send them another email because, again, yeah, that's just bombarding it. There's so many emails, and we kind of talked about it earlier, about calling and not emailing. Probably one of the reasons why is because you get so many emails, we don't look at all of them, especially if it's something that we know is not going to be substantive. And if we're known to be like that, then maybe it's an important email we missed.
Mm-hmm.
So, yep. Yeah.
Cool. So those are the four. One, call, don't just email. Two, involve your significant other. And I clarified how to involve the significant mm-hmm. other. Three is identify your spheres of influence and target one individual. Word of mouth will go from there. And four is go out of your way to accommodate.
Yep. All right, so we got two best ever listener questions. The first, before I ask it, I want to get some context, because if I just ask this question, it makes no sense. And so in response to a blog post, eliminate 99% of your competition with this simple real estate strategy, which is based off of an interview Joe did, episode 1106, so many episodes, where he interviewed Daniel Amadouri. And basically what he did is he had a three-step process for eliminating competition. And step one was identifying some problem in the market that no one wants to address or everyone kind of avoids. In his particular case, the first thing that he identified was foundation issues. And he said moving forward, he basically asked brokers instead of any deal that people don't want. But in particular, the first idea was foundation issues. And then step two is after you identify the issue, find the solution. And in his case, the solution was that the cost to address these foundation issues were a lot less than what most people actually thought and what he actually thought. And he stumbled across this by accident, actually. And then step three is become the go-to guy in the market for that specific type of property. And you do that by basically reaching out to anyone that you know, brokers, other investors, to say, hey, if you find a deal that has foundation issues, let me know. I want that deal. So with that context in mind, a question asked by Aaron was, I'm always a proponent of finding solutions to create opportunity. In regards to apartments, do you have some specific problems we can look at, we can look to specialize in? Similar to the lines of what Daniel did with his foundation issues.
Ultimately, you're looking to get a deal and having a competitive advantage in acquiring a deal. That's the root of this question. And so I'm going to address the root of the question, because the direct answer to your question, Aaron, is do I have specific problems we can look to specialize in for apartments? My short answer is it depends on the market and depends on what issues are prominent in your market that are turning people away from potential deals. In Texas, it could be foundation. In the Northeast or Midwest, it might be something else, weather-related for cold weather. I don't know. So let me address the root of your question. That is, how do we get competitive advantages with our deals, and how can you? And a lot of best ever listeners might remember the story where we purchased a 300-plus unit property, 90% were one bedrooms, and then that was on market. So it was an incredibly competitive situation. However, we looked across the street, saw the property was primarily twos and three bedrooms, 200 plus units, and we saw an opportunity to get that off-market deal, combine it with this on-market deal, and gain competitive advantage, because guaranteed no one else thought about that. And we purchased both of those together, and we're operating it with efficiencies, plus we're able to get a good price instead of paying a premium because it was a marketed deal and the bids were going up and up on just the 300 unit. So the answer is look across the street from the property that you want to buy and see if you can combine the two and get an off-market deal combined with an on-market deal, have economies of scale with the operations, and be able to operate it more effectively and make more money that way. As far as specific problems, look in your specific area. I think that's a sub-market specific question.
Yeah, and I believe in Daniel's situation, he just kind of stumbled across his by accident. But when you asked him, how do you identify these issues? You just ask the investors and the brokers in your area, what aren't people buying? And
then you'll
get their responses, and then you'll know what it is.
There you go. That's a great point. Yep.
All right, so the second question is by Carolyn, and she asks, whenever you're presenting a project to investors, are you able to share past performance/distributions for any of your past or current holdings in progress? So actual versus projected.
Yeah, you can. Now, I can, because I don't have a REIT. I was interviewing someone, I forget their name, on our show, And I don't think the interview's aired yet. Mm-hmm. It's going to be aired next month or so. He has a REIT, and he said that he can't discuss past performance of deals in the disclosures, which is mind-boggling to me. And again, I haven't done my research on REIT, so I'm not sure. But I can tell you, because it's likely that everyone on this show isn't creating a REIT. It's more just let's just get some deals done and let's register them with the SEC as we should as either a 506B or 506C. Yeah, you can show past performance on deals, and we certainly do. We have case studies. I have a spreadsheet that shows that we have hit or exceeded the quarterly returns for all of Ashcroft's portfolio, and it shows the projected versus the actual, and something we're proud of, and we can show that absolutely for deals that we've already closed on. If we are currently under contract with a deal and someone asks us, what's your past performance for deals? Then I can do that too. There's many things I can't do, but one of the things I can't do from an SEC standpoint is I can't publicly solicit via this podcast. I can't say we have XYZ deal available right now. If you're interested, email me. I can't do that, but I can talk about what I'm working on. Mm-hmm. And all this being said, I'm not an attorney, blah, 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 blah. Go talk to an attorney, if securities attorney in particular, if you want more clarification. These are just my non-legal comments.
Okay, cool. All right, so that concludes the listener questions. Let's move into some updates and activation. What you got going on in the business, Joe?
I was in Dallas this past weekend. I spoke at the Memphis Invest Conference with Chris Clothier and with Jesse. He's the owner of the Atlanta Hawks, him, his wife, and Than Merrill. He's a popular real estate guy. I had dinner with him and Chris last week. Really enjoyed that. And saw some of you all there. Thanks for coming to introduce yourself to me. I enjoyed that. And then also we've got a deal that will be closing in approximately December 5th. And due diligence going great on that. We actually just got back the appraisal. And it appraised for $1.3 million more than what we're buying it for. So that's great to see the spread there. And the focus is just continuing to make sure our current portfolio performs. We're actually about to send out our monthly emails to our investors. We'll send that out after we get done recording this. And things are going great. Working on a refinance on one of our deals, and that should be complete at the end of this month.
So let's say the appraisal came back above the purchase price. If it came back below the purchase price, is that something that you're allowed to go back and renegotiate? Or is that something that will allow you to back out of the deal? Is that something that you would even do? Or would you just continue kind of moving forward, even though the appraisal is a little bit lower than you expected?
You have multiple questions. There are different types of answers because there are different questions. Your first question was, are you allowed to go back to the appraiser and talk to them? You can contest whether that will or won't be effective. I don't know. Depends, but you can contest, so wait, how you valued it on this. I have supporting documentation. You can see where that goes. Two, you can go back to the seller anytime.
Okay.
It's up to him or her to decide if you are going to win that argument. And ultimately, it boils down to what leverage do you have over them and what do they have over you.
Okay.
If you're non-refundable on earnest money, then you don't have much leverage. They'll say, oh, no, thank you. And then you can decide if you want to continue to pursue or not. If you're refundable and you just got some due diligence costs sunk into it, depends on how much it is, maybe. I don't know. And if it does go below, then a lender is obviously going to take note of that. So you'll either have to bring additional money at closing or decide that you don't want to close or figure it out.
Makes sense.
Cool. Now, what's going on with your properties?
So let's see. As I talked about last week, looking at 3-4 unit properties I purchased about 2 months ago and having some issues with the boilers in one of the properties. And so I've been back and forth from the properties for the past couple of days working with the contractors to get the radiators fixed up. And it's funny because for liability purposes, they won't move anyone's stuff. and I keep putting notes on the residence doors to move their stuff away from the radiator so they can have access to it. And they keep not doing it. Mm-hmm. So I keep having to go over there during the day, move stuff out of the way, and then at night, they'll move all their stuff back until I come back the next day and move it again. And so I haven't got a call yet today, but I'm hoping that, because today's the last day, I'm hoping that they didn't do it last night, because I emailed all of them. I had the contractor talk to all of them when they came back.
How many different
It's four.
Four different apartments.
Yeah.
And all four are moving their stuff back? That's almost...
Yeah.
That's strange.
Fortunately, two of them are just tables, but you know, one person's got these little vases and pottery stuff everywhere, and I'm like moving them and hoping I'm not breaking anything. But I think it was the first day when it was most stressful because I had no idea what would actually happen, because I know they told me these are the problems, but I just figured once they started opening things up, they might find additional problems. And of course they did, and they had to go into the basement and drill through this concrete slab in order to pull out one of the pipes in the radiators. And then when they're in the basement, they found a leak from one of the showers, so I had to get that fixed too. But they should be wrapped up today. They're going to refill the boiler, and fingers are crossed that it actually works, mm-hmm. and that the boiler itself isn't damaged or needing repair or replacement, because that'll be a pretty big price tag. And then I'm going to schedule, obviously, the other radiators and boilers and the other properties to get looked at in the coming weeks, just to make sure everything's good there, pay up front, so that moving forward, all it takes is an inspection. Mm-hmm. I did have some good news. I mean, very, very minor good news. But another one of the units, their bathroom sink was, like, clogged. And, like, it's not unclogging at all. So we're going to place some plumbing in there. And for some reason, the way the plumbing's set up, it goes, like, into the kitchen. And so we have to pull the countertop and the cabinets in the kitchen. But the problem is like, the countertop's, like, one of those old ones where they put down a piece of plywood and then put, like, tile on top of it. Mm-hmm. So he said you need to buy a new countertop and a new sink because when I pull this off, it's going to break. And that was, like, you know, $300. But right before I walked in here, he called me and said, oh, he pulled it off and it worked perfectly fine. I was like, okay, well, I saved $300. I can,
small know, wins,
give,
baby.
Give these boiler people. So, yeah, it's a small win.
How much is going to cost boiler people?
$3,400 is it would have been initially, but after they had to drill into the ceiling and do all that, it was probably above $4,000 just for that one building. To replace a boiler entirely is about $10,000 to $15,000, depending on the size, but...
And you've
so hopefully I don't have to do that.
You got a couple quotes?
For this one right here, I did not get a couple of quotes, but for the next two, I'm going to bring people in. Because the people that are fixing this one were already doing repairs, and they already knew what needed to be done, and so I didn't have to pay for, you know, the inspection or anything like that. But moving forward, yeah, I'm getting multiple quotes, because I have no idea if what they're charging me is too high or not, so I'll find that out here pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
And then one other thing, I'm looking at another fourplex today. Oh. To potentially buy. It's in the same area. For some reason, it's listed at 170. It's the same setup as the properties I just bought for 220. Unfortunately, it's one of those things where I thought I could just go in there like right when it's listed and buy it like these ones, but they're doing like an open house this day, an open house this day, and we're looking at all the offers next Tuesday, and then we're going to pick the best one.
They're smart.
They are smart. It's annoying to me, but yeah. That's a really good idea.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'll probably have to go in above list price, but I'm going to take a look at it and apply all the lessons I learned from this property to this property when I'm looking at it. So I'm going to look at the radiators, look at the plumbing in the basement, and make sure that there's no issues. But no, we're ready to buy another property. We have enough to get, you know, a $220,000 fourplex again. That's what we're going to search for. And I talked to my realtor today, and if we don't get this property, she's going to send out a direct mailing campaign for us.
Mm.
So that's what I got going on.
Excellent. And October 22nd?
October 22nd, I'm getting married, yeah.
You're getting married? Theo's getting married.
I am.
I don't know if it's your engineering background or what, but my buddy, who also recently got married, I was having a conversation with him, one of my best friends from high school, and an hour and a half into it, someone else had to mention, oh, and we call him Worm. Worm, aren't you getting married? He's like, oh, yeah, I got engaged, too. It's like, what? And Theo got engaged a couple months ago.
About a month ago, yeah.
I had no clue. I don't know how I found out. I think Samantha on our team told me or something, because you mentioned in passing. And now I just found out through Samantha that he is getting married in...
getting married in the 22nd,
a
week.
A couple weeks or a week,
Next Saturday, yeah.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. The same thing happened to my neighbors, too. I was outside and... I'm talking to him, like, oh, you got any plans in the next couple of weeks? It's like, I'm getting married. And they're like, oh my God. And everyone comes, like, then of course, like, I don't know how, like, maybe everyone heard it or somehow. It's like, a bunch of people start coming out, like, oh, what's going on? And the guy's like, oh, Theo's getting married. Like, oh my God. It's like, no, the whole neighborhood knows.
Well, congratulations.
But, thank you. All right, so just a couple of miscellaneous housekeeping. So the Best Ever Conference. We still got the $100 discount for those early bird special until Halloween.
Yep.
So make sure you go to besteverconference.com to book your ticket. And that's in February in Denver again. Mm-hmm. And then we've been publishing some articles on Forbes.com. And so we're going to start mentioning the most recent article on here. And so the most recent article that we had published was entitled, Should I Buy an Investment Property in a Flood Zone? In response to the recent hurricanes that occurred. So go check that out. And I'll put a link in this YouTube video. And then we'll get a link in the show notes as well. And finally, we're continuing to do our best ever shout outs. So make sure you go to the Best Ever Community on Facebook and post what you would want us to shout out on the podcast. And then we select someone at random. This week, the person that won is George Emens. And the shout out that he wanted us to read was North Star Realty. It's a family owned and operated real estate company focused on property management and investment sales. We are a great solution for people looking to invest in the Cincinnati market who do not live here. Check out amangeo.com for information about our company and our management group. And I might actually check you guys out because I would like to start looking at property management companies in Cincinnati just in case something were to happen that I just want to put my properties under management. So,
cool.
There you go.
Interesting website URL for a company called North Star Realty.
Yeah, I didn't want to try to pronounce it.
Well, thanks everyone for joining us. I hope you have a best ever weekend. I'm headed to Baltimore with Colleen because a couple months ago, Southwest Airlines had a wow sale. It was about $30 to fly to two cities, and one of them was Baltimore. We hadn't been there together.
Nice.
We're going to Baltimore this weekend, meeting up with some people, and going to be enjoying Baltimore. Have the best of a weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.
You want to get better at negotiating real estate? Well, how about, do you want to get better at negotiating real estate for free? Even better, right? Well, go to fundthatflip.com/best ever. Fund That Flip, today's sponsor, has partnered with best-selling author Jay Scott to provide you with a free chapter from Jay's new book on negotiating real estate. I've read the book. Lots of good real-world case studies sprinkled in there, too. I love it when they do that. Go to fundthatflip.com/best ever to download your free copy of the chapter today. Ready to bring your real estate investing dreams to life? Learn how to get focused, gain momentum, and the proven roadmap to make it happen with the Time for Investing Masterclass. Doors for enrollment are now open. Reserve your spot today with Neva at Neva, NEVA, at timeforinvesting.com.